I have had the privilege of knowing Brian for a long time. I knew Brian when he couldn't grow facial hair. But he'd grown up, and what a great, great beard, huh? I mean, really, really. It's a real privilege to be here. You know, I was just thinking about the cool weather. The day is going to come about July when we'll be very, very grateful for a morning like we had this morning, huh? Here in Texas, that's the way it always is. It always warms up. Well, I'm glad to be here. It's great to be at Keystone. Always a privilege to speak here, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. It's a real joy when your son and daughter-in-law will trust the microphone to you, and I really do appreciate it. So thank you. And to the guests in the house, let me say welcome. We're glad that you're here. If you're a guest, I think you ought to give our guests another round of applause, welcoming them. This past week, my wife and I flew into Washington, D.C. We were there for a conference that was going on, and we flew into the airport and got in the vehicle to drive over to downtown to the hotel, and as we drove through D.C., we passed by some monuments. You could see the Lincoln Monument. You could see the Jefferson Memorial, and in sight between those two, direct sight line, was the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. And it was intriguing to me because I'd never thought about that memorial and how it aligned with Jefferson and with Lincoln. We went to the hotel, and most of the conference events were localized in the hotel itself, and so we'd go up the elevator to the room and then down the elevator to an event and then back up, and sometimes I would go down and Jam would stay, or vice versa. One occasion, I went to the elevators, and as I did, I noticed the door on my left. The door on the left had a plaque on it, and it sort of intrigued me. I thought, well, wonder what that's about. I walked over, and the plaque said, Martin Luther King Jr. Suite. I thought, wow. We saw his memorial as we came in. Unique. It's the only memorial in the park of a non-white person. And here his suite on this same floor. And I thought, you know, perhaps he stayed right there. And we stayed on the same floor with Martin Luther King Jr. And it triggered something in my mind. It took me back to college days. And in college, I was a religion major. And then part of my major on the other side was speech and English. And in our speech course, one of them, we had to study great speeches that had been given in America. And so I chose the Martin Luther King Jr. speech that he delivered standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and that great speech that was delivered for the March on Washington concerning jobs and that gathering, that massive number of people. You could stand there and see out across that entire mall of people gathered. And he delivered this famous speech entitled, I Have a Dream. So thinking about today and thinking about being here this weekend, I went back and I reviewed that speech again. And in masterful ways, in a marquee moment, he was able to weave throughout that speech a common theme. And it wasn't just that I have a dream. There was a dream that was specified by him as he wove through that speech with metaphors and similes and different changes and ways of speaking. He wove through that speech passionately, appealing for freedom. Freedom. I mean, he pictured it. He would, with great word pictures, he would portray the kind of America that he desired, the kind of America that he longed for, and he would do it. And always he is weaving around the theme of freedom. He comes down to the conclusion of that speech. And if you've never read it, it would be an interesting read for you if you've never studied it. Matter of fact, last night after the service, the second service, I believe it was, a guy stopped me and he said that he had studied that speech. And he was absolutely amazed at the different ways that Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. King, was able to focus on freedom in the speech. And he comes down to the end of it, and he sort of concludes it. It's sort of, he just comes to, you know, he was just rising, rising, rising. He comes down to the end, and here's how he said what he dreamed of for freedom. He said, when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every city and hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands together and sing, in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last, great God Almighty, we are free at last. That great speech that was pivotal in the turning of our nation was a speech that spoke and appealed to the desire for freedom, freedom, freedom. Over these past several weeks, Brandon has been talking about freedom. And with this mark, this broken chain, symbolizing the freedom that comes in life change, which is a priority embraced by Keystone Church. And over these weeks, walking through the commandments and how that God has given them as guardrails and guidelines to put us on a pathway of freedom to fulfillment in life, he's talked about that week after week after week. Now, I'm not going to pick up on the commandments. He'll finish that out. But I want us to take another journey. I want us to engage with Jesus as he is on a journey where he meets an unlikely person and speaks to her about freedom and fulfillment. And I want you to join me with your imagination, if you will. If I can, let's set the context. Jesus had been baptized by this radical reformer named John the Baptist in the Jordan River. He left there and went through the temptation in the wilderness of Judea, and then up to Galilee, where he inaugurated his ministry. He's now back down in Jerusalem. And the disciples, they hear him there by his person and by his persuasion. Many, many people become a follower of this young rabbi, to the degree that the word on the street was that there were more people becoming disciples of Jesus than were disciples of John the Baptist. John the Baptist had been tolerated by the religious leaders to a degree up until this time. Jesus did not want to get into a confrontation with the religious leaders, so when he knew that they knew that his popularity as a rabbi was growing and it was a revolutionary kind of ministry that he was setting forth, he said, I'm going to Galilee. Now, to go to Galilee meant that you went from the south to the north. Israel is a narrow strip of land along the Mediterranean Sea. It's not big, even though this postage stamp size piece of property is at the center of the news all the time. And in the history of Israel, this small piece of property, it's had a prominent place. But it's small. It's like leaving Fort Worth and driving to Rockwall, and in that distance, you've covered the same distance that there is north to south of Israel. So it's not very far. And if you're traveling in a car, it doesn't take very long. But if you're walking, it takes a long time. And so the shortest distance between Jerusalem and Galilee is a straight line. And in that straight line, there is a region. Galilee's a region at the north. Judea's a region at the south. And in between the two, there is the region of Samaria. When Jewish people travel from south to north or north to south, they did not like to go through Samaria. There was a great animosity that existed between the Jewish people and the Samaritan people, and there's a history to that. But the animosity was there. There was racial prejudice. There was religious prejudice. And the animosity was so great that there were times when people traveling, if you were Jewish traveling through Samaria, that it could become violent. So they didn't naturally go that way. It wasn't a social trip. They would go to the east of the Jordan River up through Perea and to get to Galilee, or vice versa. But Jesus said he was going through Samaria. So he makes his way through the region. And as he does, he comes to a city. And in that city, it's a fork in the road type city. And Jesus stops before he gets to the city at a well. And we're going to pick up where he engages the most unlikely person. But from this engagement, if we will allow our imaginations and allow the text to speak to us, we will see how that God has something for each one of us. And that we can leave here today, every one of us, living life unlocked on the pathway of freedom to God's designed fulfillment for each one of us. So let's look. John chapter 4, and I want to begin reading at verse 5. This is where we pick Jesus up. He came to the city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, or Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. That's important. Understanding who Jacob was, he is the name bearer for all of Israel. Jacob was Jacob the heel grabber until he had an encounter with God that was transformative to his life, and he became Israel. From the heel grabber to the prince, that's Jacob. He was the father of both Samaria and of Judea, important figure. And so he came there to this plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. And Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus by the well, and it was about the sixth hour. And woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, listen to this, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For the Jews have no interactions with the Samaritans." Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him." Real interesting interaction. "You would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get the living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?" Jesus answered and said to her, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I will give unto him will become a fountain of water springing up unto everlasting life." And the woman said, "Let me have that water. Let me have that water." Freedom. Freedom. As we lean in to this encounter and listen. Now, what I read is the brevity of the experience. It's sort of like the Wikipedia version. And how you say, how do you know that? Well, it began and his disciples went into town to get food. That's where it began. And you got to know there were no In-N-Out burgers. And there were no Subways. So you couldn't run in and grab a sandwich and run back. It would take quite a while to go in and get food and come back. And so in all likelihood, this encounter and this conversation lasted maybe an hour or maybe 2 hours. And so what we have recorded and what I read is actually the summation of the experience. But as we understand the context and the background to it all, we can begin to see what really is occurring and how it relates to you and me. And so if we will allow ourselves to just lean in, listen very carefully, learn all we can, it will be transformative for each one of us. It will help us to be able to leave here, living life unlocked, experiencing freedom to fulfillment in life. Because here's what we know. As you look at this, I identify with the lady. I personally do. In this, that all of us long for freedom to live free. All of us long for freedom to live free. When you think about the freedom of speech in America, when you think about the freedom of press in America, when you think about the freedom of religion in America, you understand that this is precious and people have put their lives on the line repeatedly to preserve those freedoms. We are a people who love freedom. As a matter of fact, our nation is a nation known for its freedom. And so when you think about freedom, it's a big encompassing topic. And I wanted to see, what does freedom actually mean? So you look at the dictionary, the Oxford Webster, one of the dictionary, and they say that it is the power or the right to act, speak, or think as one wants without restraints or without hindrances. This mark of the church, it is a mark that says we want to live life free. We do not want to be restrained, and we do not want to be hindered. We want to experience. And could I tell you that that is what God designs and desires for each one of us? He designs, desires for each one of us a destiny. And that destiny is walk along the pathway of freedom, living life free, in order that we might find the fulfillment that He has designed for each one of us. God has not allowed us to be born on this planet without a purpose. Just being on the planet says that God has a purpose for our lives. And this pathway is a pathway to the fulfillment of that purpose. And so freedom is being able to live life without the restraints. It is being able to live life and live life, as Brandon says and the symbol says, unlocked. That's us. That's what we want. That's what we long for in this country. That's what we long for as a nation. The Statue of Liberty, think about it. The Statue of Liberty in the harbor in New York. What does it say? What is that statue called? The statue is called Lady Liberty. Lady Liberty. It could just as easily be called Lady of Freedom. Lady of Freedom. We are a people, as a nation and as individuals, that we long for freedom to live free. My wife and I have had the privilege of being a lot of places on this planet. And wherever you go, people know of America as the land of the free and the home of the brave. America is admired as the land of the free, the home of the brave. Freedom, freedom, freedom. We continue that theme as we look because it is a longing in our hearts. But as you look at this lady and listen in, you discover that she is not free. Matter of fact, she has more chains around her life and around her heart than we could ever imagine. We can't go down every avenue to see them, but as we listen to the conversation, they are multitude. You look at her and you see immediately these chains that bind her. She has moral chains. It's unthinkable that a woman would have 5 husbands in that day. I mean, Liz Taylor can get away with it, but not her. It was unthinkable. It was scandalous morally. 5 husbands. And living with a man wasn't her husband. It was scandalous. That's the reason she went at noonday to the well. It's because the well was a place where people would gather for social interaction. But she went at noontime. The other women, they go late in the evening or early in the morning. They didn't go at noontime in the heat of the day. She went in the heat of the day. Wonder if it's possible that she did not have the opportunity for social engagement and encounter with the other women. Is it possible that she had bound around her heart the chain of social rejection? Is it possible? I think so. Religious chains around her heart. Here she is trying to do she's into the religion scene, but the more that she tries to do right, the more she feels bound up. Every way imaginable, as you listen in to the interaction and her desire for freedom, you discover real quickly that she is a woman in chains. Let me ask you, is it possible that we have some chains too? I thought about this, and I thought about the other week when the service that came out and dropped the chains. Were you here when they dropped the chains and they hit the floor? And it was riveting to me. And from then until now, I'm asking myself, what might be the chains that I have? Is it possible that maybe somewhere in my past that I did something that has brought shame upon me, and I'm living with a chain of shame? Is it possible that someone has done something to me that has caused deep resentment and bitterness deep inside of me, and I'm living with a chain of resentment and bitterness? Is it possible that I have never really connected with God, and I'm living with a chain that separates me from Him? I thought it might be a good thing for us just to take a moment and ask the Holy Spirit of God, even while I'm speaking, what is the chain that binds me, that holds me back? What is it that keeps me from experiencing the freedom to live free and find the fulfillment that God's destiny is for me? What might that be? For you see, all of us have a longing for freedom to live free. But we have these chains that hold us back. And we try to break them, and the more we try to break them, it seems like the tighter they become. So what do you do? Well, I'm listening in. That's her. Could be me. I'm listening in. And as I listen in, I hear Jesus say something to her that really grabs my attention. Because as I listen, I learn that God offers the gift of freedom for me to live free. God offers, did you hear me? God offers the gift of freedom for me to live free. It's not that He says to me, let me show you, if you'll try harder over here, if you'll try harder. No. He says, here is a gift. And notice how that Jesus leads this lady to uncover the issues so that she might experience the freedom He has destined for her. He leads her. He begins by saying, and if you're not careful, you could miss this as you read it. It seems almost like that Jesus asks a question over here that relates to nothing here. He's asked for a drink of water, and then he asks and says something else, and she responds in a way, and it almost seems like it doesn't go together. But if you understand the context of it, it does make clear sense. Jesus, in the conversation from the well and the water, he turns and says, go get your husband. Go get your husband. Why would he do that? Go get your husband. And she said, I don't have one. I don't have one. And Jesus said, you're correct. You don't. You don't. But you remember, he's leading her to uncover the issues that grip her. And so he's uncovering one of the issues. And he says to her, no, you're right. You don't have a husband. But you've got five. In the days gone by, you had five, and now the man that you're living with is not your husband. And so he uncovers it, not with condemnation because she received it, but with compassion that drew her into him. And she says, I sense you are a prophet. You know things about me that nobody else could know. And we know later in the conversation that Jesus knew everything about her. Because she says later, come and see a man who told me everything about me. So the conversation, he's uncovering, he's leading her to uncover the issues and recognize the chains that are binding her. He leads her into it. And so she says, okay, I've got an issue and I want to deal with it. Do I go and worship here at this mountain, or do I go and worship at that mountain? Which mountain do I go to worship? And why I worship? Well, because worship carried with it sacrifice. And sacrifice was always for an atonement. It was to correct the wrong in your life. It was to make a sacrifice so that you might be broken free from that which was binding you. And she was saying, okay, do I go do it here at the Samaritan temple, or do I go down to Jerusalem at the Jewish temple? Where do I go to offer a sacrifice so that I may address this? I really do want to address this. You're right. It's an issue. I'm bound up. I want to be free. Where do I go? What do I do? And Jesus looked at her and said, you don't go to either one of them. Neither. What? Neither. Not either one of them. And then he says, if you knew the gift, and he refers to it again and again and again and again, and the gift. And what is the gift? On down, he says to her, the gift is out of the Jews, but not just for the Jews. He says salvation is from the Jews, but not limited to the Jews. Salvation, soteria, what is that? It's deliverance. What is that? That's freedom. What is that? That's breaking the chains. I've got issues. I know that you recognize that I've got issues. And these issues are binding me up. I need to be free. I want to do something. Jesus said, you don't need to do anything. It's been done. We've just celebrated Easter. On the cross, Jesus paid the penalty for the price of all of our chains. He was placed in a tomb. And on the third day, he rose from the dead. The chain of sin, the chain of death, the chain of hell, the chain of the grave, the big four of the apocalypse, they couldn't hold him. He broke every one of them. And when he broke all of them, he looks at you and me and says, there's not a chain in your life that I can't break, not one. And it's a gift. It's a gift. It's a gift. Oh, it is. Where it is the gift? Where is the gift? What is the gift? It's from the Jews. And Jesus said, you're looking. She said, oh, I know there's someone coming. He's called a Messiah, and he's going to deliver us. He's going to break our chains. He's going to set us free. And Jesus said, you're exactly right. And she said, well, I'd like to know more about him. He said, you're looking at him. It's me. I'm the gift. He actually uses a phrase that he used repeatedly to describe himself as God that's come in flesh. He said, ego I me, I am he. I'm the one, I am this one. I am the gift. You get me, you get the gift. You get me, I break the chains. You get me, I put you on the pathway. You get me, I lead you to fulfillment. It's a gift. It's a gift to be received. So, the longing is real. The gift is there. And oh, by the way, this gift that God offers for freedom to live free is for all people. It's for all people. You look at this and you see that there were all kinds of problems going on here in the interaction between Jesus and this woman. All kinds of them. But it's a free gift. A little later, Jesus says in John chapter 8, verse 32, he says, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And so sometimes we think the truth is a body of teachings. If I just know them, I'll be free. Well, Jesus goes on in John 14:6 to explain that. He said, I am the way, and I am the truth. Ego I me. I am. I am. I am. You want to know about the gift? I'm the gift. If you want to know about the truth, I'm the truth. If you want to be set free, I'm the truth that sets you free. Now, I look at that and I say, man, that's what we want. That's for us. But is it for me? And the gift that God offers is for all people. There's nobody. Nobody excluded. No one excluded. If you look at this interaction with Jesus, you'll see that. But isn't it amazing? Over these years, Jen and I were talking, my wife and I were talking about the number of years we've been doing this in ministry. It'll soon be over 5 decades. Well, it's already over 5 decades that I've been speaking. I've been preaching. And it's 5 decades that we've been doing this. And people want to be free, but when the gift is offered, it's just almost like it's too good to be true. Too good to be true. Years ago, Jen and I went to Russia. And outside of the city of Moscow is a city called Klin. Klin is known for two things. It's known for the place where they make thermometers for the Russian people. But it's also known as the place, the estate, now the museum of Tchaikovsky. Well, we were there because we were there speaking in a church. And the mayor of the city invited us to his home for a meal, and it was really a big deal to get to go to the home of the city of the mayor, Klin. Klin's a city of about 80-some-odd thousand people. And we went to his home, and he really rolled out the red carpet. But here's something you have to understand, that his idea of a great meal and a person from Texas' idea of a great meal may not be the same. He wasn't familiar with brisket, and he wasn't familiar with ribs. And so when he rolled out the red carpet and put the one of the primary delicacies for him before us, it was beef tongue. Yeah, beef tongue. My wife, she didn't groan out loud, but when I looked at her and he laid it out before us, I knew she was groaning. Groaning. It's a great experience. Sometime later, I had the opportunity to talk with him. His name was Paul, or is Paul. And I had the opportunity to talk with him. And when I did, I talked to him about the feeling that he had of being bound up. And I'd offered to him the gift that I'm talking to you about right now. I said, you can be free, Paul, and you can enter into God's design and destiny for your life, transferring your trust to Jesus. And I made it clear that it was a gift, and he looked at me. And as much as said, the gift is too good, and I've been too bad. And he explained to me a little bit about his history. Paul had been a leader in the Young Communist Party. Paul had been sort of like a leader in the Young Communist Party. And the area that he led was the area that enforced communism in the home and on the youth. And so if you were a parent and you went to the Orthodox Church, they'd say, okay, you go to the Orthodox Church. But then you started letting your children and your students go to church, they'd show up. The enforcers. Paul and his hoodlums would show up knocking on the door. And he told me of some of the things he did, and he said, that's not the worst of it, but what he told me was horrific. And he looked at me and he said, the gift is good, but I've been so bad, it's not for me. And I said to him, I said, Paul, let me tell you about another guy named Paul. Paul was a bad guy. He's a bad guy. And he is really bad. And I told him about Paul, who was Saul, who became Paul the Apostle, the writer of much of the New Testament. Paul later said in a public gathering, he said, I was this close in that private room. I was this close. I was this close. I wonder, is there anybody here today who've never stepped over and by faith embraced the gift that God has given? Maybe you're just this close. Our prayer is that you don't leave here just this close, but you'll close the gap and step into the broken chain and walk out of here free and on your way to living free. You see, it's for everyone. Nobody's too bad. Nobody's too good. Everybody. This woman, think about what Jesus did. He said, I've got to go through Samaria. And the question is, was he taking a geographical shortcut? Or was he identifying a spiritual appointment? I believe it was a spiritual appointment. I believe he said, I got to go because I know I've got an appointment at that well in Sychar. I believe that God said, I've got an appointment. Maybe that appointment is with you today. Matter of fact, could I just say I believe that God has an appointment for all of us. We're not here by coincidence. We're not here by accident. We're here because there's been a divinely arranged moment for you and me. It was a marquee moment the day that Dr. King stood on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and spoke to all of those people. As far as you can see, there's people on the mall. It was a marquee moment. This is a marquee moment. It's a marquee moment for you and me. I asked myself, what is the chain? Spirit of God, identify the chain and let me embrace the one who breaks the chain. Jesus crossed barriers. He crossed all kinds of barriers in order that he might get to that woman by that well and fulfill that appointment. And let me tell you today, he comes into this room in order that he might speak through his word, through everything that's happening to you and me and saying, let me tell you, you can walk out of here in freedom to live free and be fulfilled in life. And that turns me to the last thing I just want to say. When you walk out, you don't walk out anemic. You don't walk out weak. You walk out with power. You see, God gives us the power of freedom to live free. Again, right back to this experience of this woman. Look at it. Jesus was a masterful communicator. He knew how to use metaphors and simile. And when she came up to that well, he engaged her with water. With water, with water. Give me a drink. And the conversation begins to talk about water. But what's he doing? He's leading her to a conclusion. He began with the end in mind. He's taking her somewhere. And he talks about water. Something that she knew about. People in Israel know about water. And water is of great value. He's bringing up a subject of great value. Water is scarce. Water has three sources in Israel. The Wadi. And that's where you have a rut or a ravine. And when the rain comes, it runs in there. And then in a little while, it's gone. It's gone. It's not permanent. Then you got the well. The wells that are dug. And this well, Jacob's well, is over 100 feet deep. It was a big well. It was a good well. Wells are a big deal in all of Israel. But there's a third kind of water. A third kind of water. Living water or running water. It's the same. Living water, running water. And it's water that bubbles up out of a spring and forms a river. The primary one in all of Israel is a spring that bubbles up at the base of Mount Hermon. Coming out from under a great cliff, just volumes and volumes and volumes of water. They just come bursting out of there. And then you go down the way just a short distance and you're in the Jordan River. Fresh, clear, beautiful water with trout in it. Can you believe it got trout in Israel? Some of y'all don't know it, but I love the trout fish. And so I see the trout, and I'm thinking, man, look at that. And it becomes the Jordan River, and it goes down into the Sea of Galilee and out of the Sea of Galilee and down the Transjordan Valley. And where that river meanders for 100 and some odd miles down that Jordan Valley, you can count on it. There's going to be life everywhere. Now, here's what I want you to know. In the Old Testament, God's not compared to a spring. He's not compared to a wadi. He's compared to running water. Why? Because it speaks of life. It speaks of vitality. And if you engage in a relationship with him, you're going to get all that. And Jesus said, let me tell you, I'm not only the chain breaker, but I'm the God connector. Let me connect him and you. And I'll do that, he said to her. And she said, give me that living water. Thought about this message. Thought about those chains. And it took me to a strange place, a strange person. In the 30s and 40s, United States, there was a man who became a king in his field. Like Elvis Presley was considered the king of rock and roll, this person was considered this king of country music. He lived barely 29 years. Barely. January 1, 1953, he died. He died of a massive coronary that was caused by pain, by alcohol, by drugs and the abuse of them. For you see, this man lived in chains. He lived in chains. He could never, never, never really get free. In the fall of 1952, Hank Williams, not Bo Cephas, but Hank Williams, he recorded an album. That album was released in the spring of 1953. And out of that album, not only did the whole album go up there, but there was a song out of that album that became a symbol of everything in Hank's life. And while it spoke about romantic relationships, I have no doubt that it spoke about more in his life. And the introduction and the title of the song is, take these chains from my heart and set me free. I listened to the song time and again this week to get the pitiful plea of the song. The pathos in the song. The heart cry in the song. I believe that when we say, take these chains from my heart and set me free, I believe Jesus says, let me tell you, if you'll let me, I'll break the chains. I'll break the chains. I'll break the link in the chain that holds you. I'll take the chains from your heart that you might be set free to live free. And not only that, but in that relationship with God, find the fulfillment of the purpose that I have for you in life. Have you ever wondered how people in the direst of conditions can seem to be so free? Have you ever wondered about the people in Syria who are Christians in the direst of conditions living free? Have you ever wondered how they can do that? You see, it's not the condition of your environment that determines your freedom. It's the condition of your heart. And Jesus says, I'll take the chains and I will set you free. For every one of us, every one of us. Let's bow our heads for a moment. You've come today because of many different impulses, but there is a divine reason and destiny for your presence here today. Let me ask you a question. Is there a chain? The big chain. That's the father of all other chains. Is that of lack of connection with God? And when Jesus said, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life, he also said, the only way you're going to connect to the Father is through me. He stands at your heart's door, as it were, and says, if you'll let me in, I'll break the chains and set you free. Have you ever done that? I know some of you did that at the women's retreat. And I want to say, that's the greatest decision that you've made. It's the greatest one. Perhaps you're here and you need to make that initial step. Trusting Jesus, accepting the gift that God offers through him so that you might live in freedom to live free. In the power of a relationship, not rituals and regulations, but a relationship. You'll know the truth. I am the truth, and I'll set you free. Trust him. Maybe you have, and you've allowed some change to get hold of you. There's nothing in our lives that come that God through Christ is not greater. He's greater. So, Lord, we give ourselves all the way to you that you can do in our lives what you choose to do and want to do in making it possible for us to be set free and live life unlocked.